This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Even though it's, you know, 350 feet of wire, whatever it is, I mean, the fact of how it went down and then, you know, laying motionless, like while the play's going on. I mean, Craig saw it, I saw it, we both got out there. I don't think the umpire saw it, unfortunately, because of the way the ball kicked, you know, but just it's extremely unfortunate. I mean, that's an understatement.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. That was the Pittsburgh manager, what's his name?
Derek Shelton. Derek Shelton speaking about the incident that cast a pall over the entire game. The Pirates beat the Cubs, but everybody was talking about what happened in the seventh inning. A man is in critical condition after he plunged around 20 feet from the stands to the ground at PNC Park. He was tumbling in the air before he landed. You saw, if you watched the video, which was circulating online, if you didn't watch it, you're probably among the lucky ones because it's very difficult to see. It really is. And it was on the warning track in right field, and he lay motionless, and the players looked shocked, and they were on one knee. You saw some people trying to just gather themselves, and you saw the look on Craig Counsell's face. It was one of horror.
Yeah.
And it was just a real
something
scary
you've never
moment.
Really seen, and it wasn't someone jumping. He looked like he literally fell over, and the way his body turned as he
It looked
fell.
Like what happened was, okay, so Andrew McCutchen was at the plate. He hit a ground ball. Yeah. It was a double, turned into a double.
They get the
and
lead.
They scored. They take the lead. They scored two runs. And it looked like he rose to his feet in excitement. And he leaned on the rail, like maybe yelling something like, yeah, or whatever. And then he fell, and he slipped. And then when he was going, when he was falling in airborne, he did a somersault, appeared.
I'm just curious. What are the rules? You're in television. Do you show that? Do you not show it?
That's a really interesting question, Mully, because I think that
I mean, you don't show it in replay or anything.
What's the
like
obligation
that?
of a TV news outlet when you have the opportunity or the I don't want to call it an opportunity. It's a choice. It's a choice. Do you show that or you not show that? Do you show that after the fact because it serves as a deterrent when you find out more because you don't want people to do or act in a way or get close to the railing or whatever it is, or do you spare your audience the horror of that indelible image of seeing somebody fall to not his death, he's in critical condition.
I wouldn't call it a full-blown nightmare, but that was by the time I went to bed, it was in my subconscious.
Oh, no, it was hard to watch. It was hard to think of anything else after that fact. If you're watching the baseball game, imagine how the players must have felt being that close to the action and being in that stadium where, let's face it, it wasn't a crowd that was those aren't big crowds in Pittsburgh. Those aren't like you get lost in the moment.
There's not tons of energy.
Those are, believe what we just saw, and how are we going to process this?
The center fielder seemed like he was running in, right? The ball was coming in, and he seemed like he had his back to it and
he
was running in. I'm saying, like, you would have heard something behind you. Like, that.
Well, Kyle Tucker was running in, and you saw him running in, and we're having this conversation as WGN is televising or showing highlights of the incident, and their choice is to not show.
They're showing the players
the video
in the infield all on one
right.
knee. Yeah,
and you see the things, and I'm sure the national networks are making their own decisions as well. I think that's probably a wise choice not to show the incident.
Yeah.
But as you described, Kyle Tucker's running toward the play.
Yeah.
PCA's running toward the play. I don't know if they're aware of what happened behind them, but you can immediately see Craig Counsell comes out of the dugout. Derek Shelton comes out of the dugout.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get somebody's attention. And to the credit of the medical personnel at PNC Park,
yeah.
it appeared as if they were so quick to react. And you wonder what the man is still in critical condition. You wonder what life-saving measures they took or how quickly they responded and if that helped save a life because of the response.
I got to be honest with you. Just having seen the fall, his life may be saved, but it will be a different life moving forward. That looked, I mean, it looked like the guy almost landed on his neck or something. It was just god-awful. I mean, it was... The shock of it was just something you weren't going to get over in any big hurry. Just awful. It just looked awful. It's not like, it wouldn't help if you were landing on your feet, but it just looked so wrong to land where you landed. It just put a shudder through you.
It will make people
yeah.
think twice when they are at their next game. And if they're seated in the first row, and
that can't be allowed to happen. They can't, like, you're gonna have to raise the rail or create another bar. You cannot have that happening ever again. You can't allow.
How do you prevent it?
I think you're gonna have to, and it's gonna be a problem because it'll be a problem for you to see the game. But I think you're gonna have to put like a longer bar. You can't have a bar where a guy can just tumble over it.
Will you have like a screen?
You could do it that way. I mean, I don't want to see netting everywhere because then it's like you're in a circus act, hey, look, woo, I'm going to get caught. You don't want to make it so that that's something someone could choose to test.
Well, the netting was installed around baseball after fans were hit with foul balls and they reacted to that with netting. So I wonder... Would you have a similar response based on this one incident?
I told you, when my kids were little, I took them to a Sox game, and I'm sitting there, and I like the aisle because I like a little leg room, and they're like, I'm on the aisle, and the three of them are on my left, and then there was a rocket foul that it was nowhere near us, but I was like, oh, hey, guys, everybody move down one. I'm going to sit like I had the kid. I had myself sitting, so if a foul ball came into the stands, at least I could not catch it, at least I could absorb it, and it wouldn't hit my little kids.
Everybody has to make their own.
You don't think about that when you're going to the game, but then it suddenly occurs to you when you realize.
You've got to think about that when you're going to the game, especially with children.
Yeah,
you're
no question.
We're getting some text feedback about, well, he was overserved or he was drinking. We don't know that. You can try to assume that there's some anecdotal evidence of that, but we don't know until
we
do.
Aren't there like what they call dram shop laws that would prevent you from serving booze to a guy to the point where he'd fall over?
I don't know. I mean, I think that they tried to cut off alcohol sales at a certain point. That was in the bottom of the seventh inning. You just don't know the circumstances until we do.
I don't think it's responsible
to speculate.
I've also always felt that the beer is so expensive at the ballpark, you couldn't afford enough to knock you over. You know what I mean by that? Like, you'd have to be.
In theory, I know what you're saying.
You'd have to have.
In reality, that isn't the case.
Well, you'd have to have kind of Brandon's pockets to be able to afford one of those. What is that called?
The beer bat?
Yeah.
The beer bat.
You're the only guy I know who ever had a beer bat.
I wanted to try it.
He's not the only
guy.
Still
paying for it.
He's not the only guy that's had a beer bat.
He had to take out a loan.
Yeah.
Well, did you have a beer stick? Didn't you have one at the
hockey stick? Yeah.
Was it a hot?
It was at the Winter Classic.
Winter Classic. You had a
I had a hockey stick beer, or whatever they call it. What was it?
Same concept, different sport.
It was the same concept. I've had a beer bat.
What is it, like two beers, three beers?
I think so. I think you're paying
for
like
a case.
It costs like a case.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, of course it would. Yeah.
But they still have the souvenir. Yeah, it's a couple beers probably.
Did you hang on to it?
I did not. My son hung on to it. I think he is somewhere.
That's cute.
But yeah, it's cute.
He was 10.
And you didn't get just a domestic beer, right, David?
I did not get it. I don't recall the exact beer that I got. I don't think it was a domestic beer, though, Dustin. No. Why are you mocking my beer choices?
I'm not
now?
Mocking. I'm talking about the whole concept.
Beer? Like, no, he paid the extra 50 cents of a can for the larger one.
More than 50 cents.
Might be a bit more than 50 cents, but I.
It's pretty funny.
They get people. Yeah, you know, that people love to go to the ballpark, unwind and relax, and have a couple. Beverages. You should, you know, obviously, when something like this happens, I think everybody will
I agree.
Check their ballpark behavior a little bit closer next time and watch where they're sitting, because it's scary to see. And let's hope that you don't have to be exposed to that if you don't want to be exposed to that image, that video.
Oh, good God. Yeah.
And it was called skillfully and delicately by Pat Hughes, who described things like a professional, and that's why he's a Hall of Famer. Pat and Ron Coomer saw it immediately, knew it was a scary situation.
Jeez, it was awful.
And then after that, they played on, and they could have chosen not to.
Yeah, they could have probably, because they're playing this morning, they could have probably finished the game. And, you know, it's interesting that they didn't. I don't even know if they had that conversation. You know, I mean, it took a while for that to kind of to get back to the actual game, but I don't know that they ever really had a serious conversation about postponing the end of the game, etc. It didn't seem like they did.
It was nice of the Pirates to issue a statement after the game, and also Andrew McCutchen tweeted out just his feelings about it. He was certainly the guy at the plate at the time. Truly hate what happened tonight. Can't help but think about the guy, his family, and friends. I pray tonight for him. And Cub players from Dansby Swanson through everybody that was quoted in some of the stories, they had similar sentiments.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you know, it doesn't take much to say a prayer for someone, and it's something you kind of naturally do. But I got to say, it's just, I mean, you need some really powerful prayers for that fall. That was just god-awful to see. Awful. Oh, I just can't believe that happened. And, you know, again, the man seemed to fall out of his seat. It didn't seem like it was any kind of, you know, attempt to jump or anything else. It seemed like he tripped, and he may have gotten up to cheer, and he fell over the bar. And just the way that he went down, it was just such a free fall. It was so shocking to see something like that. It was like someone going to the edge of a cliff and just falling over. Awful.
And you could see the Cub players as the cameras worked around the from on the field to in the dugout, Justin Turner was making a gesture like the flip that he was trying to describe to somebody. It's like some players saw what happened, some players did not.
No.
And then you would find out later exactly how it all unfolded. So back to baseball this morning. The Cubs back in action, 11:35, first pitch, 11 a.m., our pregame coverage with Zach Zaidman, and so it's right here on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Of course, Paul Skenes pitching
on the bump
for the Pirates.
Yeah, and we had a conversation about him being maybe the number one pitcher in baseball, the number one event pitcher. In other words, you want to see him when he pitches, maybe more than any other pitcher. You know, certainly, everybody has a favorite pitcher on their team.
Hunter Green's a good one.
That they want to see. Hunter Green is a good
Brandon
one.
Brandon Fryer's really, he got me there. I did not have him in my top five, and I should have. I think Hunter Green has been up to this season.
If you hadn't been obsessed with just having ex-White Sox players.
Well, I was actually trying to trigger you a little bit.
Yeah.
I put Garrett Crochet fifth on my list just for a little bit of a reaction. And, you know,
you had Dylan Cease seventh.
I was thinking
was
Dylan
five.
Cease was seventh. Shota, I could watch Shota. I love watching Shota, but I was trying to not have a Cub bias in the top five. So I had Skene, Sale, Skubal, Shohei, and Crochet.
Zach Wheeler.
Yu Darvish would be a good one. Yeah. Yu Darvish at the top of his game is must watch because of the array of pitches and how well he executes them all.
You said Michael Kopech. would be a guy you'd like to have.
There was a time where Michael Kopech. There was a time when Michael Kopech was in that class of guys that you wanted to not miss a start, right?
Back in the day.
Back when he first got here. I can remember, this is going back when he made his debut. I was still working at the Tribune. And
yeah, you went out there.
His debut,
did a story on him, as I recall.
In September, I think it was. Yeah. It was a rainy night. It was a happening.
I think it was, we had Peter Gammons on, and he told us that the feeling in Boston, he had talked to a bunch of, obviously Peter's out there, and he felt multiple Cy Youngs. That's what we were expecting when Kopech was just
kinda, is that all?
When he was throwing, remember he would like just
I do remember
throw
that.
105 miles an hour against a wall or something. All he wanted to do was throw over 100 miles
an
hour.
And I cringe every time somebody says stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like multiple championships, multiple Cy Youngs. Win one.
He's holding a Cy Young before he's done.
I love Peter Gammons. I just think that
that's nice.
The expectations were outsized. But Michael Kopech, back to the original point, his starts were things you did not want to miss.
Yeah. They traded Chris Sale, and they got the number one prospect in baseball and Michael Kopech. But so you got multiple Cy Youngs, and you got Yoan Moncada, who was just – and then they got –
he was going to win a batting title.
They got a couple MVP. Other guys, right? Didn't they get a couple other guys that just kind of –
Basabi.
Yeah.
Remember Basabi?
Is that – yeah, Basabi.
That Lewis, was the other guy. Don't you remember that one cool night when Michael Kopech threw the ball at the dirt?
Yeah.
It hit the ground at 100 miles per hour.
Oh, boy. He threw it to China, through the earth. It barely made an indentation, but...
Don't forget about Victor Diaz. He was a part of that trade, too.
Victor Diaz. I had forgotten about him, and now you caution me not to. He's where is he? Oh, no.
No.
Yeah.
That was not a trade that aged well.
The Sox didn't win that trade.
Red Sox won that trade. They won that trade the day that they won the World Series.
And the Sox did. That didn't work out.
Okay. And Chris Sale was on the mound when they did that.
Yeah. It looks like
why are you down
Crochet,
Sale?
The Crochet trade looks better just because they haven't all busted out of baseball yet. There's a lot to look forward to.
That is a trade that I think is going to be beneficial for the White Sox because you look at Chase Mydroth.
You get Chase already up.
He's up. He's coming back soon, right?
He's got the thumb. But you got a Montgomery that will make it to the major
leagues. Braden Montgomery.
Yes.
He's not in Arizona trying to find himself.
One of the rare.
He just got promoted.
A rare Montgomery.
Yes.
Who will make it to the major leagues, we believe, someday.
He's not been sent to the ailing ward. The Montgomery Ward, if you will.
Oh, that is beautiful.
So I think when you
as
talk about...
As a man that worked for years at Ward's Paint,
that's why I love
that excites me.
Yeah, I love that reference.
Montgomery Ward.
That's going to be a good trade. Kyle Teal also has been pretty productive.
He's been hitting of late, huh?
Yeah, at AAA Charlotte.
That's right.
They have a catching surplus. It's a nice problem to have. I do wonder, because of the catching surplus that they enjoy, is Kyle Teal a candidate to change positions? We had this conversation when they made the trade.
No. I bring them both up. I have one guy DH and the other guy catch. I think they're both catchers. I think that's a valuable position. And when they get good enough, then they could make a move maybe to...
Corey Lee would say, what about me?
Yeah.
What about me?
You can pinch hit.
Really? You're just demoting him that quickly.
I got these two guys.
All right.
I got one too.
Yeah.
And Caro is like now my favorite Sox player. I just love this kid.
Mm-hmm. And you do.
I do fall in love with
come
the young
in
guys.
Every day with a new thing about Edgar Caro.
I do follow him very closely because you know why? Who else am I supposed to look at?
Well, you also respect the way that a 22-year-old young man has tried hard at improving his communication skills.
Incredible.
And you give him a lot of credit for doing something that not a lot of players do, but he's also got to worry about handling pitchers, hitting major league pitching, adapting to Chicago, and he's also grasping the language very well.
He has really done an extraordinary job of learning English. The way that he communicates, he understands that the pitching staff isn't just guys that can speak Spanish, so he's worked on his English. I love that element of his game because we've seen previous kind of superstars come through Chicago and the language barrier may have prevented them from getting the sort of national attention they deserved.
Jose Abreu comes to mind.
Well, that's the guy I was talking about.
That's who you're referring to.
But I really love Jose, but I'm saying that this kid seems to have a mastery of English that is beyond a guy that just kind of learned the language over the last year and a half. And he just turned 22. Like, he was 21 3 weeks ago.
It's a great point. And you do wonder about Luis Robert Jr., who remains somewhat of an enigma.
Right.
If he could communicate himself and have everybody realize what a great personality he can be, if he, it has been something that has maybe gotten in the way. So it's a valid point, and it's something you have respect for Carroll.
Yeah, I really, and I like that he's hitting and he's doing stuff, and I like him at the plate. I'm behind it or at it is good by me.
All right, let's talk to Tommy Haddavy when we come
back.
Yes,
we're going to talk to Tommy. There's so much to get to, so many things we'll talk about, including a guy we were waiting on now on the 60-day IL. We'll get to all of it next. Tommy Haddavy joins us, Mullion Hall on the Score.
Pitching coach Tommy Haddavy of the Cubs wearing the blue pullover.
Tommy Haddavy, pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs.
You're transitioning from being a player to kind of getting into baseball. You take an online class, was it at Boston U, Sabermetrics 101?
Yeah. I was a finance major in college, and I had an economics minor. A lot of it was to, I'm going to refresh all my econ knowledge, and I'm going to do it in a baseball course. It's like one of the best things ever.
There's just a lot of trust there with Tommy. We know he's such a hard worker. He puts in all the hours and really, really knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching.
Tommy Haddavy, breaking down the starting rotation and bullpen on the north side with Mullion Haw.
I'm here for one reason. I want to help these guys get better, and we want to win baseball games.
Tommy Haddavy on 670 The Score.
Tommy! Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to the Cubs pitching coach Tommy Haddavy, and he joins us now on the Aturo Hotline, Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, aturo.com. Tommy, good morning. Thanks for getting up with us again.
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, guys. Good to hear from you.
It's a fun one because we love these kind of early games. At least they fit our schedule, and that's really all we care about, Tommy. But it should be fun. You know, I think we talked about it. Paul Skenes is worth the price of admission. You know, you guys have been the best offense in baseball, and this guy's just one of those pitchers you want to see pitch.
Yeah, it's, you know, good young pitching talent, I think, in this league is always exciting. Getting to watch a guy like him in division, watch him go out there with the stuff that he has is pretty impressive. And that's what you want, like, in baseball. You want premium matchups with elite pitching, with good offenses, and you love that, you know, that challenge that presents. And he's obviously a challenge for us, but, you know, we're a team, we're an offense. It's shown that we can beat some of the best pitchers in the game. So I'm obviously excited for the matchup today.
Tommy, let's go back to last night. What a difficult thing to process, I would imagine, from the dugout, from your vantage point, just from everyone who was in attendance at PNC Park, when you saw the fan in the seventh inning plunge 20 feet from the stands down to the ground, medical personnel respond immediately. Take us through your mindset and what you saw and how you processed that.
Yeah, it's obviously a lot of emotions. Prayers and thoughts and everything go out to the fan, his family, or their family, and anybody who's with them. The craziest thing for us, I guess, from our vantage point, was the emotions of the play, and you see the ball kick off Dansby, and the ball shoots out toward right, so everybody's looking at the ball, so everybody saw it. You know, you saw the whole thing from our vantage point, and it was kind of right in that area, and you just, like, your first thought is just shock, like, what just happened, what was that? And then as the play settles, you realize it's actually a person. You know, you immediately start thinking for the worst, but it's just one of those situations that you just pray you never have to see. You pray obviously for the family and for the person that, you know, they're going to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, it was a sorrowful moment. I don't know how to describe it. It was awful. And, you know, we were talking about whether there was any discussion of delaying the game to this morning, because you're obviously already playing a morning game. You could have gotten it in. But I don't know how you continue in that situation. I think you do it because it's what you do. But that was just – I've never seen that before at any – Eddie, I can't think of a venue or a game where I've seen that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I think immediately you just went right to, like, what happened. And I think being able to get the fan off the field and rush them, obviously, to the hospital, I think had it been a longer delay, I think you'd probably look at doing something like that. But, again, in the moment, you're just trying to process everything. You're just trying to process what happened. And then make sure that everybody's in a good headspace to continue.
Tommy, hold on 1 second. We're having a problem. Did we have that resolved? No. We're trying to clean up that.
We'll
line.
Reconnect with Tommy Hotovy, who's trying to describe, you know, watching what happened with the fan falling and seeing the medical personnel attend to him, and then still having the having to move on because they did that and they had to resume play, and it was a seventh inning and they had two more innings to go. Yeah. So as we rejoin, I think reconnect with Tommy, not yet. All right. Well, it's going to be difficult for the Cubs getting ready for a day game to this morning in Pittsburgh.
We do have Tommy back. Sorry about that. Tommy, I have no idea what happened, but there was like a buzzing noise. Sorry.
No worries. No worries. I'm walking out on the field and they're mowing, so it could be me.
So Tommy, let's get back to baseball. You have a big game today, but I'm curious how you would explain the big move yesterday from a transaction standpoint. Chris Flexen joins the Major League pitching staff. He was in the organization, former pitcher for the White Sox, a veteran that gives you some flexibility. What are the plans to use Chris Flexen?
I think, you know, right away, just the ability to provide some real length out in the bullpen. We know this is a stretch of nine games in a row. We had some great stretches of off days to give our bullpen, you know, some rest. But right now, like, being able to give us some length to cover, you know, our the majority of the guys have been carrying the workload lately is going to be big. And I think for Chris, you know, he's a guy that we originally, you know, we obviously added for starter depth, and a guy that we, you know, we're hoping we can help identify some things we wanted to, like, he wanted to continue to work on to get better. He did a fantastic job of that this spring, honing in on a little bit more athleticism, pushing a little bit more velocity, some things that, you know, he felt like he kind of got robotic, you know, as the years, last couple of years went on. And you know, he had a great April. You know, a really good April in Iowa, and a guy that, you know, I think has been around. He's pitched, you know, quite a few innings in this league and is going to provide some real, like, needed depth out there for sure.
And you know, a corresponding move there was seeing Javier Assad go on the 60-day IL, which was just a bummer, knowing that he seemed like he was closing in on a return. And then, you know, obviously the issue takes him out of a start in Iowa, and now we see it's going to be a couple months.
Yeah, unfortunate for Javi, you know, a guy, you know, who we've relied on so much over the last couple of years, and has proven that he could really be a dominant pitcher in this league. And thought he was getting close. He was four innings into his last outing, and just going out for that fifth just kind of, you know, felt something in that same area that he'd been dealing with. So, you know, We've obviously got to give Javi time to let this thing calm down, but I think as a group, we're going to continue to put our heads together to figure out what could be causing this, you know, what could be causing it to reoccur. I think when it happens one time, you're like, okay, that can happen, you know, a bad pitch, a bad move, a bad play, something might, you know, cause something in that low back, oblique type of area to you know, get set off. But when it happens again, you start questioning a lot more things. Is it something mechanical? Is it something, you know, he's doing off the field in the weight room or from a conditioning standpoint, something that might be re-triggering it? We got to, you know, figure that out as a group.
So, Tommy, anxious moment the other night when Shota Imanaga left the mound. we all wondered how bad the injury was. Turns out that it was just a cramp. You wonder if it's something that's going to linger. What's the latest with Shota Imanaga and any concerns about him missing a start?
You know, I don't think we have any concerns about him missing a start right now in terms of like how this lingers and how it goes. Anytime your body's cramping, there's going to be a little bit of, you know, like, I guess trauma is not quite the right word, but a little bit of stress and tension and tightness is going to come from it. You know, we'll obviously monitor him over the next few days, make sure his catch play looks good, make sure his bullpen tomorrow looks good, and that he's progressing the way he wants to as well. In these moments, too, we can do the best we can. And he's going to know more than anybody, I guess, is the point I'm trying to get at. We're going to communicate with him and make sure he's feeling good. We were joking afterwards. He ate five bananas, and he said Kawasaki's, like, you know, monkey never cramp didn't work. So he's going to have to talk to Kawasaki about that one.
Oh, that's hysterical. Hey, we were talking about something that Craig Counsell said last week. He was talking about Ben Brown, and he was extremely candid and forthright in saying, you know, it's not good enough, he's got to be better. And I think you only say something like that if you believe that the guy is capable of being what you want him to be. How did that go over? How did Ben respond to that? And what do you think about what Craig Counsell had to say?
Yeah, I think the reason Craig said it is because that's what Ben is thinking to himself too.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
I think Ben knows that he has the ability to be an elite starting pitcher in this league. He knows that he's continuing to work on things and get better. He knows, that when he's right, he can go through one of the most dominant lineups in the game. You know, in Dodger Stadium on the road. So, you know, for him, you know, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be great games with a bad inning. There's going to be a rough start that he's going to have to work through some things. There's going to be a start where he goes out there and just absolutely rolls for six innings. And I think for Ben, it's learning how to stay, you know, central and stay even through all those moments. Because when this game's cruel, you know, you could be rolling like you did last game for three innings and then give up five singles, you know, on the ground and hit a guy and completely changes the game in the outing. So I think Ben knows that. And you know, the one thing for Ben too, like he's continuing to work to grow his arsenal, to work on new pitches, to find ways to continue to improve. And I think back to last year, had he had the last 3 months of the season to do a lot of the things that he was wanting to work on last year, y'all, like he might be in a very different place right now. And I think is extremely important for us with Ben to get him back to that initial point of success, you know, trusting his two best pitches and get on a nice little steady run here of building up innings and workload to then continue to work on the things that he wants to work on. It was tough last year in the offseason not having kind of the full ramp up, the ability to work on all the things from a pitch package standpoint that he wanted to work on. But we're going to see that evolve as this year goes on. I'm 100% confident in that, and I'm confident in the work that he's putting in. So, you know, it's going to be fun. The Ben Brown watch this year is going to be fun to see when he does start to break out some of those newer pitches in his arsenal when that time comes as he continues to gain more confidence over the year.
We only have a minute left, Tommy, but so will be the Cade Horton watch, which will be a lot of fun. And I can't help but notice that this year – in five outings, he has yet to give up more than three hits in a run at Triple-A Iowa. For a team, look, no disrespect, Colin Ray's been great. Chris Flexen is a pro. But can we get excited about Cade Horton yet, or are we still being patient?
I think people have been excited about Cade Horton for a while. But I don't want to temper any enthusiasm right now. I mean, yeah, he's definitely doing the things that we know he's capable of doing and he knows he's capable of doing. And, you know, there's still some things I think in his mind and in the organization's mind wanting to continue to hone in on and sharpen up over here, you know, this the next, you know, few outings. But he's definitely on the radar. Guys, guys that are pitching well down there, especially early in the season, that work hard in the off season and kind of roll into the season, those are the guys that should be on your radar. And he's doing a fantastic job right now.
Great stuff. Great catching up with you, Tommy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
That is the Cubs pitching coach. That's Tommy Hotovy. Interesting.
Good stuff.
Yeah. He's good. He's always real.
Yeah, he provides a little human element about what happened last night and also is able to look at this pitching staff objectively and give us a little hope for the future.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've done great. It's not a problem till it becomes a problem, and I think that's kind of the attitude you have about the third base situation, which has become a problem.
It is a problem, yeah. But he didn't want to temper my enthusiasm over Cade Horton.
No.
So,
no,
okay.
I guess he's enthusiastic as well. Hey, keep listening for your chance to win your way to see our live show on Friday, May 16th. It's in the Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage. You can be part of a studio audience as we get you set to start the Crosstown Series. We've got special guests, plenty of Cubs and Sox chatter. Plus, there will be popcorn, and it will be provided by Nuts on Clark, and it will also be provided by Mr. David. He is a passionate maker of popcorn. He's going to make his favorite popcorn, and we can judge that against the professional stuff from
Nuts on
Clark.
That's on my business card.
That's Friday, May 16th. It's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all.
Passionate maker of popcorn.
There you go.
That's me.
That's him. That's what he does. He doesn't just make it. He makes it with passion.
With passion. It's popping all over the place.
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Good, young pitching talent, I think, in this league is always exciting. Getting to watch a guy like him in division, watch him go out there with the stuff that he has is pretty impressive. And that's what you want, like, in baseball. You want premium matchups with elite pitching, with good offenses, and you love that, you know, that challenge that presents. And he's obviously a challenge for us, but, you know, we're a team, we're an offense that's shown that we can beat some of the best pitchers in the game, so I'm obviously excited for the matchup today.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. That is the voice of Tommy Hotovy, who is just with us talking about the big game today.
Yes.
Again, the Cubs take on Paul Skeens and the Pirates in today's series finale at PNC Park, and pregame coverage begins at 11 a.m. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, they'll be on the call. The first pitch, 11:35 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
I wonder who plays third base today. I wonder who plays third base after John Birdie's error led to two unearned runs on Wednesday night in the loss to the Pirates. I wonder if it will be Nicky Lopez. Does he get a shot today? Because I think that is a position that is going to nag the Cubs all season long. Nicky Lopez bats from the left side. Maybe if you want to grind out some at-bats, maybe you want to maybe throw in a bunt here or there. You want to manufacture some runs. Maybe he's the guy against Paul Skeens today.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think that we keep thinking that's Matt Shaw. That's his position, and he will be back to take it at some point.
He'll be back.
He's starting to get some better results in Iowa.
Yeah.
He had a game there. He had three hits.
Homeward Sunday.
Yeah. It's interesting because I guess the idea was that when he got to the major leagues, there was like kind of things were moving faster, et cetera. So he tried to speed up his swing a little bit to keep up with it, and that kind of threw him off base, and it just wasn't it didn't work, period, end of story. He was a little bit ahead on some stuff and a little bit off on others, and, you know, he's down now trying to figure it all out.
I am not trying to trigger you. Just I'm going to preface this.
Okay.
But this is not a Colson Montgomery situation.
No.
Okay.
I
don't mean that in any sort of derogatory way.
No.
I think they're very different situations. It's easy to lump together. Top prospects start slow and they need to change plans.
He's hit at every level, and then he came up to the minor league or the major leagues and he struggled. So he's back down in the minors cleaning some stuff up.
You know,
Montgomery never kind of was hitting, then he had a good Arizona Fall League, and they thought maybe he's ready to go, and then he had the
It was a premature promotion.
There you go.
And I think with Matt Shaw,
it wasn't really a promotion, it was a tryout. They prematurely thought he could take that job, but they never really let him have it because he got hurt and he struggled and he wasn't doing enough to win the championship.
Baseball Reference this morning will tell you Matt Shaw in 9 games is hitting .324 for Iowa.
That's pretty
he
good.
Does have a home run. It came on Sunday, 4 runs batted in. His on-base percentage is .452. That's an improvement at the plate. He's more consistent there. But is he a 4A player at this stage of his career, a guy that maybe will struggle if he returns to the majors? My sense is they're going to have to find out, because I don't think that any of these options that they're trying now are going to be the ones that you trust in the long term.
No, they don't have an answer at that position. I think that's fairly evident. They thought the answer was going to be Matt Shaw. They tried him to start, and guess what? It didn't work. Gage Workman's already been cast asunder, so that's two.
He's already made an error for the White Sox.
You got Birdie committing an error yesterday. They've signed Nicky Lopez. I'm just telling you, as you look at it, they went through 7 players last year.
Brujan.
And now, there's another. Now you're going through – now we're talking – have they played 5 different players at that position? I don't believe they have yet, but
Turner.
Maybe today they do. Turner, would that be 6?
Who started? Door.
Let's get the list. But, you know, 7 different guys from a year ago, all gone, and now here you are, and you already, I can think of 3, 4.
Too early to make a
off
trade.
The top of my head.
Never too early to be concerned.
You got to be concerned. Yeah, you got to be concerned. You know, you don't overdo it, but yeah, you got to be concerned. 312-644-6767. Are you concerned? It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.